Hello, and welcome to Educational Triage, where we discuss issues in alternative education. This is a discussion about teaching by teachers, for teachers, and others who are interested in the alternative education world. We hope you find today's episode relevant, engaging, and useful. And if you do, please subscribe. I'm Tony Hunt, and I'm here to help guide you with the help of my friends Christy and Philip. Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Educational Triage. I'm Tony, and this is a place where we are able to talk about alternative education and other things educational. We are here to talk, explain, bring up ideas, bring up issues, and try to figure out what's right with the world of alternative ed, what needs to be done, the where's and the why's. Maybe you are upset, maybe you are engaged, hopefully the latter. Anyway, I am joined here by my wonderful friends, Christy Goodell.
Hello.
Christy, you want to tell them something about yourself?
You bet. Yes. Hi, Christy Goodell. I am a special education teacher. I have about 20 some odd plus years of experience in not only special education and alt ed, and I'm just glad to be a part of this discussion.
Okay, great. Thank you. And Philip Summers.
Yeah.
Been
an educator for probably 25 years in the public sector and all kinds of different ways in coaching. And before that, I even worked in a daycare when I was going to college to become a teacher. So in any case, lots of experience in alt ed and a little bit of experience in regular ed.
Great. Thank you. And my name is Tony Hunt, and I have just under 40 years of experience. I started in 1983, and I've taught from pre-K all the way up through community college and university level. I have taught workshops and trainings. So I'm kind of all over the place, and I've taught just about everything under the sun. So here we go. So what we are going to talk about today is what we believe to be the foundations of a good alternative ed program. So, Philip, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, sure. The first thing I think an alternative program needs to be is bottom-up planning, student-centered curriculum. And by that I mean, the students run the school, the program itself. Their needs come first. Years kind of, they're diverse. And from year to year, students need certain things. And some years it's more writing and more TLC, and some years it's less TLC and more counseling, and on and on. So I'd say bottom-up concerns. Students first.
So the students would guide the evolution of the program through what's necessary?
Yeah, intuitively, the teachers know their students enough. We're talking about a small program, I would say. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in small programs. And so you can't really have a big program. You have a small program, teachers get to know the students really well. And then they work with them. And they sort of change curriculum. They change deadlines. They change focus. It's the package. The kids come with their emotional baggage when they walk through the door, too. And an alternative program actually can accommodate that as well. And that's great. Part of the Students First program. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Christy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so parallels my thinking, is that it really has to be kind of student driven, like absolutely the small group, right? You can't just have these enormous sizes and then expect to have get to know all your students and what their needs are and what their learning styles are. But I think having, when you have that safe climate and culture and community feeling, if you've established that, then you can help it helps with the buy-in with the students so that the students can kind of tell you how they learn best, especially at, you know, most of my experiences at the secondary level. And so that's kind of, you know, the high school levels where I look. But just in terms of like students, how they demonstrate their knowledge to you, it's not a one size fits all. I think that is the big mantra for Alt-Ed. There are lots of different ways for students to demonstrate comprehension and knowledge, and it doesn't have to be a Scantron bubble test.
Great, thank you. My first one that I'm going to pick out of my list is an agile and able-minded staff.
Yes, flexibility.
And
yes.
And what I mean by that is we need to have bringing somebody in on an alternative program, they need to be able to change. They need, when, let's say, in the program that I'm running right now, where I'm working with three students who are sitting around me, and one of them is on math, one of them is doing something with science, and somebody else is doing language arts. And one of them will say, I have a question about this, so I turn towards them. The next one taps me on the shoulder and I flip around, and my brain has to be able to focus on what they're doing. And I even still have to think outside the box when I'm talking to them, because it's how can we best serve the needs of our students in what they're working on and make it so that they're engaged and we're addressing their needs at the same time.
I think that's a huge one. Yes, yes, yes. Like, it needs to be, my next one was like collaborative, right? Like, you totally nailed it when you have to be flexible and, you know, you may have, it's like your plate spinning, right? Like that circus act. You have to be able to, and the expectation is that there's going to be lots of things happening all the time within your program. Whether it's just like in your class or if you're bringing in, you know, the vocational part or the internship part or the, you know, the career path. And some people are working on career exploration. And like you said, some are working on their core. You have to be flexible, I would say, to adjust like almost minute by minute, right? And then you have to also be willing to collaborate, right? You have to be able to work well with others, your collaborative, your partnership with your students so that the expectations are clear and they know what they're working on and working towards. And you're collaborating with your co-teachers and the, you know, the community or your parents, you know, all of the above. And so you have to be able to collaborate, work well with others.
And I like the way that you put out that you're working in partnership with the students, because the students really are your partners. You're not exactly this huge authoritarian figure. You're there as an aide, as someone who's going to help them. And
yes,
almost as a mentor, but it's a partnership where you're trying to muddle through whatever the muck is.
Yes, you're in it together, right? It's not my way or the highway kind of mentality. Alt-Ed has to be, yes, it has to be a partnership, and you have to be collaborative and also be willing to adjust your timeline all the time, mm-hmm. right? You have to be able to, that's another one is, you know, there's always going to be those natural deadlines, like grades are due or they're going to graduate in June or winter break is coming. You have those kind of systematic timelines, but that just, I feel, kind of loops back into the student driven. You know, I can demand that you turn in your essay by Friday, but if you're not there, then that deadline becomes kind of meaningless, right?
Right.
Yeah, right. So I like your thoughts about that for sure.
And the other problem with deadlines, I believe, is if you can create a deadline with that student, and if there's something that's external, let's say that we have grades are due on Friday and the student needs to show you an essay or come up with something and it's Monday and you work in partnership with them and they create their own deadline in order to come up with that. and it's something that they can actually figure out. And if you chunk it, even if you have to, that you are able to figure out small deadlines that will lead to the big deadline. And so they don't feel quite like a failure because you still have fudge room.
Fudge room. I love it.
Yeah, fudge room. That's what we used to call it, fudging.
Well, and that's such a big part of it, right? Because so many, it becomes overwhelming, right? Like it's alternative for a reason. So if you have this, like, and I think that's just true in almost every career path, right? You have this big project due, presentation due, you have a play, you have to memorize an entire script, right? You have to do all these things. You have to break it down into manageable, achievable steps. And so you have to be, but that's just not an innate knowledge. You have to work with the student, going back to that partnership and the student driven, what Philip was saying. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm expecting them to do, you know, X, Y, and Z, but they haven't quite understood like the time it takes to get to know how to do X, then it's just such an important part of the process.
Exactly.
The chunky.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Philip, what's your second one?
Well, you know, we're talking about student driven, and at the same time, there is a need for boundaries. You know, the students need a lot of room to create. They also need to know where the boundaries are. And in the three areas that I find that you set the boundaries kind of in a vague way, but they're generally pretty agreed upon, is attendance, behavior, and academics. Academics being that there's a certain amount of credit you need to earn per year to graduate on time. And you can break that down per semester, and you can break that down even further into per month, like we used to do, into bite-sized pieces. The attendance part was simple. You know, you can't do the school thing if you're not in school. So we had a strict attendance policy. And when we had to, we put kids on agreements, and they knew it was coming. And occasionally a kid would be removed for attendance issues, but always given a chance to come back. And strangely enough, when they came back, they would be stellar attendance. And the third is behavior. Good community, no cursing, things like that, just a behavior standard. And these three sort of overlying guidelines really help the kids to sort of stay within the boundaries and still succeed, because they did set realistic ways to get credit, to be in school, to be a community member, to be a student. And so consequently, yeah, they're student driven, but there's also boundaries they have to observe, like we all do. So, yeah, that was my second one.
And one thing that I usually do with the boundaries, as far as behavior goes, the students create the rules. And they're going to create the same rules that we would have anyway. And there's more of a buy-in.
Yeah. Yes.
And in a sense, that comes to my next one, which is that it's consensual. And I know that with mainstream and also with some programs, especially disciplinary issues that lead a student to coming into an alternative program, sometimes that's not necessarily consensual, but the fact that they show up, that kind of says that they're willing to take a look and see what's there, but then you have to bring them in, and then you have to figure out a way for them to consent. And I think the best way for that is to involve them in the decision making and the planning and the process that they're going to be going through. And, you know, inclusion also goes with that. So you're including them, which is another one on my list. But that has a different meaning in this case, in this context. But the fact that they agree. So, for example, in our program, the students and their parent guardian, they're interviewed and they make the decision. It's just like a job interview, because a job interview is the same thing. You're looking at the job to see whether or not you want to work there, and they're looking at whether or not they want you to work there. And that's the time to pass out information, to gain information, and to work with each other to see what you can get. And once you have that that consensual relationship, then you can go a lot further than if you're trying to be the authoritarian figure, telling them what they will do, when things are going to be due, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So, some of the more extreme cases they had, you know, the attendance issues, there'd be attendance contracts we'd use, or there'd be academic contracts to help kids get together. And in those contracts, there'd be things like organizational skills that we'd suggest, you know, they try. And then we'd sort of aid them, help them through a little bit of the foundations of learning to give them a little bit of the kickstart here and there. The behavior contracts were few and far between, and generally speaking, regardless of the behavior, it always stemmed from being defiant, you know, just being asked not to do something and continuing to do it. And so that's where that came from. Yeah.
Right. And that brings up something else that maybe we should discuss further later on in another episode, but that is, what is the cause of the defiance? And just having them work on that. I was just reading something about that in an article, and they were talking about self-regulating and what are some of the skills in order to help students self-regulate their anger and identifying their triggers and taking care of those. And that's something that we worked on at another program back in the 90s, and with gangs and drug and alcohol affected youth. And there were some that, well, I'll just say that some had a pretty sad ending with the students that just couldn't buy into it, and they didn't last long. But the ones who did have been doing very well, and they're pretty strong. So, yeah. Okay, Christy, you're next.
Yeah. And then looking at kind of, you know, you're right, maybe the behavior part is another discussion, but it's looking at not necessarily what is the behavior, but what's causing it. What's driving the behavior, right? Because whatever's driving it is what you have to kind of work on and problem solve with the student, you know, in tandem. If they're, you know, leaving school, or if they're using language that we feel isn't appropriate, or they're, you know, just being outright defiant, that kind of stuff, you know, that's the end result, but you have to kind of figure out what's driving it. Are they leaving because they don't understand the work, or because it just seems so overwhelming, or they have that fight or flight pattern established for the previous 15 years of their education, or, you know, you have to kind of, well, and that takes time, right? And that's sometimes not afforded in your, you can't see me, I'm doing air quotes, in your standard gen ed, right? This kid is not performing the way I want them to, so they need to go and, you know, have a consequence, and then they come right back. And it happens over and over again until you figure out, like, why are you shutting down when we do this? Oh, you don't understand the math that I am expecting you to know. Okay, got it. Let's go back to that and figure out how can we help, you know, finding out what's causing the behavior.
Right. And it could be something as dramatic as, and I've had this happen, where a student came to school and his mother had just died the day before. And he was there on time, ready to rock and roll, because apparently, and we found this out much, much later, that the father had looked at him and said, "Your mother is no longer here to save you."
Oh, gosh.
And it wasn't until the next, and the kid said, "I tried to tell you, I tried to give you these hints." And I said, "Well, maybe you needed to take a boulder and bash my brains out, because you were just saying, you know, you weren't really, I just thought they were weird little things that you were saying." And he was having some real issues because they were never allowed to mourn his mom. Yeah. And it just seemed so very bizarre because, no, they had no money. And yes, there was a lot of abuse going on at home, which we found out later after the father had been arrested for abuse. Oh, and we had to find the best placement for the student at that time. So, but it's there are little things that happen. I've had kids whose parents leave town and don't pay the bills. And so the kids have no food. They have nowhere else to go. They have no survival skills whatsoever. And the parents, you know, maybe they're on a drug run. And you just don't know. And even in some of the best homes, you think that the kids are in the best homes. And you find out that it's a living hell for them. So sometimes you just have, they just have to know that they can count on you. And I think that there's a safety component that goes with that as well.
So, right. And that goes back to even what we talked about the, you know, the prior episode is the relationship building. Cause you know, these students aren't just going to open up to you and be like, let me tell you everything. Who are you again? Right. Like you have to build that relationship and create that. So that was one of the other things that I think I said at the beginning, you've got to build a safe, or the kids feel that it's a safe community that they can trust and depend on, and it's predictable. And then in time, and it could take weeks or months sometimes for them to kind of share some of that, the background knowledge, but having that safe, that caring, predictable community culture environment in your program. Both, I think, physically, like the actual environment of it, and then also the relationships that you have with your students and with other teachers and their guardian or parents, the people in their lives, as best you can. Sometimes that's very difficult to connect with.
Right.
Their family, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Philip, your next one. Or Christy, did you? Did I jump over yours?
I don't know. I feel like I keep talking all the time.
Okay, good.
Yay. My other, I am a very big proponent of the post-secondary, the career, the vocational piece of alt ed. That is something that comes up with in my area of work and working with families of, you know, the students will say, when am I going to learn this? You know, or they, why do I have to take this class? Or they're becoming juniors and seniors and they still don't have, not that you have to have your entire life mapped out for the next 25 years, but they don't know at all what they want to do or what is available to them. So alt ed has to have, I feel, a very strong post-secondary vocational career education, choose your word, part of it, because they're going to be learning in a different style and they need to know what's coming next. How am I going to be a valuable, positive citizen when I leave my high school? And how am I going to be able to ultimately live independently and successfully? And then that's where the kids decide what does that success look like? Because not everyone is going to college, nor should they. There are tremendous career fields out there that our kids are qualified for, but so many times it's either college or nothing, right? And so I think having a very strong vocational career component of your alt ed has to occur in order for it to be successful.
I agree. Thank you.
Yeah.
Philip, what's your next one?
Oh, I was just tossing that around, actually. I like to think about that more because I remember about 15 years ago, there was a lot of talk about actually including in funding, and I think the state level, at least, maybe not the federal, but at least 2 years of community college for students. And I thought that was a wonderful idea. And so I was looking at my curriculum and how I could gear it that way. I was doing a high school completion program at the time as well. So the end line there had been the diploma. And that is the end line for, my generation, possibly the Xers, you know. But after that the diploma definitely is not the end line. And that junior college or the focus on moving forward is really important, I think. And that wasn't in my top five, but You know, the more I think about it, the more I'm thinking maybe it should be in the top three. Because I do believe that schools should teach students how to learn and what to learn, you know, based upon what they're interested in and how to adapt that to themselves. And that is definitely post-secondary thinking. And so, yeah, I'm sorry. I throw that back at you, Christy. But that's, that really got me thinking. Thank you.
Yeah.
No, I think long-term goals, where the students set long-term goals, I think that that gives them something to strive for. So that they don't feel as though once they leave high school, that the doors close and they're going to be, I don't know, did you ever see the movie Time Bandits?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
And do you remember when they go to hell? And they're on, it's just all black and they're on these big, like, cubes. And that's kind of how I see the students believe is going to happen to them once they leave high school. And they're just kind of out there. And that's about as far as I want to go with that analogy. But, you know, there's just like this realm of nothingness, really, and that they're dangling. And that the truth is I believe that that's where I thought I was. And when I graduated from high school, I thought, oh, good, I don't really have to do anything. I have some downtime. I'm just going to sit there and I'm going to figure out what I'm going to do with my summer because I'm going to go to college in the fall. And my mother looked at me and she said, so how many job interviews do you have lined up today?
Oh, that's
and awesome. I said, excuse me? And she said, here's the help wanted page. Start digging. And I thought, I ain't doing that. And she said, oh, yeah, you are. And so I started looking and it was terrifying. And all of a sudden she circled one and it was for Nike. And I went out there and I got the job that day. But
nice.
And it took care of two summers for me. And the rest of the time I went up to Alaska. But that was absolutely terrifying to me. But I learned so much from doing that job and from just her pushing me. But a lot of students don't have that. But a lot of students have a lot more grit than probably I did at that time, where they're going out and they're getting the job because they really want the job. And it doesn't matter if it's Mickey D's. It doesn't matter what it is, as long as they have something. But to let them know that there are skills that they're learning there that are going to serve them and take them further. And, you know, Walmart is going to start paying college tuition.
Really?
Yes.
Ooh.
So, you know, there are a lot of benefits. And so I believe in teaching them benefits as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. That's I think you're right that there are a lot of students, well, A, that they are already working, right? Like, and so many of them are working to help sustain the family. Right, they are contributing to help their family in some way. Right,
right.
There's quite a few students who are doing it because they want, like, I need extra cash, or they just want the job, right? But I think there's a lot of the other parts that we, at a school or society, just assumes the kids are going to know when they graduate. How to do your taxes, how to fill out a W-2, how to apply for a credit card loan, how do you, you know, and just even applying for community college is crazy complicated. And then if you need financial aid, the FAFSA, my word, it is detailed. And, you know, we don't have those, a lot of places don't have those classes. And so I think that's another, that's kind of looped in, like what Philip was saying, of that, it's kind of in the top three because you're getting them to that goal line of the diploma, but you also we're also tasked with preparing them for life after the diploma and not right forever. Not every, you know, it's just stuff that, you know, in my age, you know, I've had to do my taxes every single year. And so now it's just like, oh yeah, it's super easy. I can do it. But like, you kind of forget way back when with the dinosaurs about, where do I look on my W-2 form and on my statement, and how do I submit this, and what's a deduction, and and all those kind of things that not every student is going to learn at home. And so we have to kind of be that safety net. So I think that's another kind of that part of alternative ed is kind of being that safety net for a lot of families who either can't or won't or don't have the time to teach their kids.
Right. And it sometimes it's not because they don't want to. Sometimes they don't even know how to do it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The parents may actually rely on the students to figure out how to do that, or they have somebody else who does it for them through some community center.
Right. So, yeah, because, I mean, so much of it when we learned was all, you know, my kids love to have me regale them stories of like, I did all this on paper. You know, you had to keep records of everything. It was all paper. And then you had to make copies and that kind of stuff. And now everything's electronic.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's another way that you have to stay organized with all your electronic stuff that the kids are pretty good at navigating. But I don't think they're good at organizing at all. Like their Google Drives will just be like one, no folders, right? It's just all.
And they all say untitled.
Oh my gosh.
Untitled, right? Yes, that's it.
Untitled. Untitled.
Untitled 2.
I went into, I just went into some kid's Google Drive and I said, so which one is it? And they said, it's the one I did last week. I said, okay, let me take a look at the date created. Or the modification date. And they're like, oh yeah, I think it was that one. Then we start going through them. And I said, would you please start giving them titles? Because this would drive me absolutely bonkers. And no wonder you can't find anything because you don't have time. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you just, you know, they're competent in their technology. Mm-hmm. So that could be another component. But just, I would say organization, like the whole, that big umbrella term for alt ed is how do you stay on top of things, either your due dates, how do you organize your files, both hard copy, because you're going to have some paper copies that you need to keep track of, and your electronic copies. Like you said, don't have everything be untitled. Don't save it all on your desktop for the love of my sanity. You also need to, right? And if one more kid tells me that they don't need a planner or they don't need to write stuff down because they're going to, they point to their head, their temple, like, I got it all here. I'm like, no! We have to teach you how to stay organized because it's just going to be more complicated as you get. And then I'll show them like my calendar and where it looks like crayons just like threw up all over my computer screen because I've got so many different categories for, you know, work, family, job, personal, you know, financial, that kind of stuff. So I think that's another, like maybe kind of like a second tier for alt ed is that maybe under that post-secondary transition planning is all like the minutia, the time management, organization part of it, how to meet deadlines, how to, because it's just a lot.
Right.
That they don't do.
So my last one, because I think for this episode, we can do maybe one or two more. And then we will revisit this next week on the next episode. And my next one is going to be in one of the best foundations of a successful alternative ed program are teachers who aren't afraid to learn. Because we tell kids, and part of the mission is we want to develop lifelong learners. And yet there are teachers who say, I don't know. And you say, well, how are you going to find out? I'll just ask somebody else is what their response is. And it's like, what about learning it? No, I don't have time for that. Well, actually, in alternative ed, you got to find the time and you've got to start paying attention and you have to be willing to learn along with the students. You have to role model that whole thing. If you have troubles learning it, that's one of the most important things, but you can't quit. You cannot quit at all. You have to show them what grit looks like. And sometimes they'll put you to shame, but you can't, you can't let that get you down. So I will look at something that a kid has. And the trick of it is, oh, I see what you have there. And then a little bell goes off and it says, tell me how you got there. Show me the steps of how you got there. Pretend that I'm an idiot and that you have to explain it to me.
Yeah.
And the kids can tell you pretty much. And then all of a sudden it starts clicking in their head and they say, oh, wait, now I know what to do. And so I say, okay, what? And then we kind of get through it and we find out the real answer. And then later on, I may check in with the teacher to say, here's kind of how I understand it. And they'll say, yeah, no, don't try teaching that. And, or they may say, yeah, yeah, oh, good, good. It sounds like they knew what they were talking about. So, but I don't want to stop learning because once I stop learning, I can't teach anymore. And I believe that teachers go into the profession because they love learning. And it may be a specific subject that they love learning about. For example, right. Social studies, maybe they just love history or economics or something. And maybe business because they just love the ka-ching, ka-ching of the cash register. Or, you know, or just watching the money flow in and, you know, and doing business type stuff. Maybe that's what triggers them. English, they love reading. They love writing. They love the exchange of ideas. But we can't be sitting up in an ivory tower looking down on people saying, we're not going to share these things with you because this is for us only. That's where you have to bring it into the classroom, but it has to be manageable chunks that the kids can grab onto. And not every kid's going to like that. I mean, not every kid likes every meal that you make for them. And they're going to wrinkle their faces and you say, you know what, just try it. Just see what you can do with it. And you know, sometimes they'll muddle through and sometimes they will just like heave and other times right. they will like love it. It really depends. And sometimes you just have to make that plate look so good.
I like it. Yeah. I liked your idea about always learning. And part of that has to be willing to, and I'm not quite sure how to phrase it, but like willing to fail. Like you got to, it's okay to be, to not, I think it's important for kids to see that it's not always perfect all the time, right?
Right.
Like we're going to and or share your experiences. It's okay to not know, right? And or to try something and it didn't work and we're going to try something else. And like, whoa, that lesson plan was a real snooze fest, right? So we're going to try something else. because I think, it's A, it makes you relatable and that, you know, you can tell all those stories of, you know, Michael Jordan for every championship I won, there were this many that I didn't win, that I, you know, was unsuccessful. You know, there's tons of those stories out there. But I think that's very important because a lot of times our students come into Alt-Ed because they are not being successful in the traditional mainstream program. So they already have this kind of, not all of them, right? But a lot of them already are like, ugh, I can't do this. I'm not smart. I'm never going to be able to succeed. I suck at this. You know, so they're already kind of have this negative mindset. So you have to be able to be positive and be rah-rah cheerleader, but also be like, yeah, it is going to be hard. And you're going to keep failing at some things. And then you'll get there. Just like I have failed on these, you know, that kind of stuff. So I feel that kind of goes hand in hand with like, you need to always be learning.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you brought up a lot of things in my mind, but that weird little conchunk just kind of like threw everything out the window. that they're there because they already do feel like a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And they're willing to give it one last shot is what happens. And yes. We have to, you know, the fact that we can tell them, you know, you haven't failed. It's not that you failed. It's that something wasn't presented the way that you needed it to be presented or something else happened. I don't know what. I'm not going to judge you on that. But once you walk through that door, every single day that you walk through that door, it's a chance for a brand new start for you. It's a chance for a brand new start for me, because I'm not perfect and I have things that maybe aren't great for me, but I walk through this door and I'm in, we're in our little own little world. We're in our own little fantasy land. And this is where we can succeed or we can get closer to success together. Yes. And we can feel joy and pride. And I don't hesitate to tell the students how proud I am of them when they hit their benchmarks or when I see them struggling, that when they're struggling really hard. And then I've had a kid who quit last year and said, I just can't do this. And I said, you know what? I'm proud of you for acknowledging that and acknowledging the fact that you need to step back a little bit. And they just kind of stared at me. But I wasn't always that way. In fact, I had a student come back to me and she looked at me and she said, do you want to know what I needed from you? And I said, what's that? She said, you never once told me how proud you were of me. I said, did you know how proud I was? And she said, yeah, I did, but I needed to hear you say it. And that was and if she's listening right now, I am sorry. But so that is really, really an important thing, because a lot of them never hear that.
Right.
And it can be changing. And just be authentic with it, though. And don't just use it willy-nilly, because you know how kids are. They can see through inauthenticity.
Oh, yeah. Like a hawk.
Oh, yeah. And they'll just look at you and they'll say, right. And then if they catch you doing that, then you're doomed. You can't go anywhere. You've got to figure out a way to get back and climb that ladder back up to where they are, because they're going to just keep pushing that ladder back and knocking you back down on the ground until you get up there. But that was your fault. And maybe you didn't realize it, but yeah. So always learning. And it's not just the content. It's about your students. It's about life. It's about looking for opportunities and just listening, a lot of listening.
Yeah. Yes. Which is sometimes hard for teachers, right? Because we're so used to being the wah-wah-wah-wah, like we talk all the time, mm-hmm. right? And so stopping and listening is, I think, very valuable and a hard one for a lot of teachers, myself included.
Yeah. One of my mentors, my greatest mentor, Barb Pilari, if you're listening to this, God love you. she said, when you're sitting down with a student and you need to talk to them and they're not saying anything, have a bunch of baby carrots with you and just sit there and eat the carrots. Every time you want to talk, you pop a carrot in your mouth and you just start crunching. And that it helps with the time. So you can get there, and it forces you to have to listen to them, and it forces them to either say stop or and you say, well, start talking then, otherwise I'm going to keep crunching.
Right.
So, and I don't like baby carrots, so it's painful for me if I ever do it, which I haven't done. I just have that thing in my back of my mind. So. But anyway, I'm going to end this episode here for us today, and then we will pick back up in the next episode. Okay?
Sounds
excellent.
Okay, so for all of our listeners, I thank you very much, and we hope to see you next week when we pop back in. Thank you.